Okay, my name is Richard S., and I'm here at the home of Dick H. It's November 16th, 2022, and we're going to talk about Dick's experience in AA. What you can recollect. Dick, what was it like before you came to AA? What was your daily life like?
My daily life was... I was still working, but I drank after I got off work until I passed out at night. Pretty much that it.
Yeah.
And I woke up in the morning, hungover, and made my best effort to work. You know, a lot of times late, you know. I was a salesman, so I could set my own hours. But I'd usually knock off work about 4 and start drinking.
Wow. It's amazing you were able to go through the day without taking a drink.
Yeah, I didn't. Didn't do any drugs.
Yeah,
just simply a alcoholic.
Pure alcoholic.
Yeah, bourbon.
Yeah.
I mean, I drink anything, but bourbon was my preference. If I had was flush, I went Jack Daniels. If not, I'd buy that shit for $1 in a barrel and little pint, half pints.
Okay. How did you get to Alcoholics Anonymous?
Well, I had a really bad night, and I woke up really hungover. I looked at myself in a mirror, and I said, "You're a mess." And I said, "You know what you need? You need to straighten up. You're not making enough money. You make all the money you want to make. You're a salesman. What you need to do is straighten up and go get some decent clothes." So I went to Penny's Outlet to get some clothes. Cheap sport coats and stuff. And a guy there, Tony D, ran into me. And Tony D looked at me and said, "You look like shit and smell like a distillery." He said, "I meet you at Oak Street tonight and go to beginner's class." He said I called about 3 times with every excuse, but I showed up. And I went upstairs to beginner's class. Back then, we still had beginner's classes. And it was at 7 o'clock. It's a funny, and that was on November the 20th, 1983. And I went upstairs, and a guy named Dune C, taught the class. I have no idea what he said. And I came back down the stairs, and I went to beginner's class again the next day, but I couldn't go anymore because I had to be out of town. I had to go to Portsmouth or Ashland or somewhere on business. And I remember I stayed at a hotel where I drank right downtown. And I remember I started to go, I guess, to Ashland. And I saw a liquor store. And I passed by it. And then I said, there's a meeting in New Boston, Ohio. That was that evening. I worked that day, or tried to. And there was a meeting in New Boston, Ohio, which is like a suburb of Portsmouth. And I guess I was working in Portsmouth. Anyway, I headed up, and I'll go up to that and get a drink. Because I was on the way to a meeting. I was going to go to a meeting in the city building in New Boston, Ohio. But I saw the liquor store. And I said, well, I'll go, but you know, what I'll do is... I saw that on the way up, and I went all the way back to Portsmouth. When I got there, it was closed. So I went ahead and went back to the meeting. And then the next day, I changed hotels, because there was a bar right in the hotel I was staying at, right downtown Portsmouth. So I went up, got out in the boondocks at a Holiday Inn. It didn't have a bar. And that's where I stayed the next 3 nights. When I came back, town, I went to a meeting Friday night. I have no idea where I went. I really don't. But I went somewhere to a meeting. I knew about Oak Street because I went to beginner's class there, so it might have been there. It might have been Russell Street. But anyway, after that, I went to Russell Street a lot and Oak Street a lot. And then eventually, wasn't long after that, the Big A was in existence. And it was in the basement of the Steve W. started that meeting. It was in the basement of the Catholic Church, a rectory up in Alexandria. And I went down there, and I knew a couple of people, because guys I used to drink with. It was only about five or six. And so I started going to that meeting routinely. And after a couple months, I went in November, probably December by then, and maybe in about March, April, May, Tom D. and Nancy D. showed up. And they became regulars of that group. So back then, the core group was me, was Steve. I think Tony went out there at that time. Steve W., Nancy and Tom, and a couple other people whose names are just slipping me. Some of them might be dead, I don't know. But that's where I continue to go. But my job allowed me to make noon meetings. So I went to a lot of noon meetings at Russell Street. Met a guy named Don D. He was really an amazing man. I mean, he'd fabricate stuff, but he was an amazing man. He was a gifted writer. He really was a gifted speaker and a gifted writer. He used to do cruises on the Ohio River and tell stories, and I mean, about the history of the river and stuff like that. And he was fun to listen to. So I got to know Don D. and a lot of the other old timers that are at Oak Street. I remember Junkyard John and Bob R. and the Scotchman, Les R. And most of them are all gone.
Furniture Jack.
The rest of them are pretty well all gone by now, but it was a real character. They used to alternate doing the beginner's class upstairs. And I bop in on there every once in a while, the beginner's class, and just listen after I was sober a little bit. And they were fun to listen to. I don't know why that ever disbanded or when it did. I'll tell you what was lost. And I remember after that we decided to start a beginner's class. I decided to start a beginner's class at Russell Street. And we had alternated people coming in, you know. And I remember people would miss and I'd get so pissed off. You know, they wouldn't show up on time, you know. And one night I'm snoozing on the couch and somebody called, "How come you're not at the beginner's class?" Or all the hell I raised with them. I slept through it. So it comes back to haunt, you know. But so anyway, Charlie, get down.
He's fine.
And I went to a lot of meetings out of town because I was traveling back then. Not a lot. I had been demoted several times because of my drinking. I used to travel a lot. I used to travel the country back then. But man, I was kind of limited to Ashland, Portsmouth, Huntington, stuff like that. And but when I travel, I go to meetings. And then we go to, when I have a national, some kind of meeting out of town with the company. I go to meetings out of town. And I'm into meetings all over the place. I remember one time we had a national sales meeting in Florida. And it was in Boca Raton at this big old pink, fancy old place. Big old driveway out in front. Well, at night, all the guys would wait for the, go out and bullshit and smoke, waiting for the cocktail hour. And I called central office down there, and they hooked me up with this lady. She was gorgeous, had all kind of money. She lived in a complex behind that fancy hotel. And she picked me up in a gold Rolls Royce and brought me to a meeting. I don't think she knew a whole lot about AA, but she got me to a meeting, and it was funny. She pulled up in a Rolls Royce around that circle, and all the guys were hooting and yelling, and, "How you doing? I'm going to go up and do spiritual stuff, guys," or some wise-ass remark, you know. And anyway, that's how it was early on. What other questions you got?
Well, it sounds like your sobriety date's November 20th, 1983.
Mm-hmm.
So you got sober after you went to your first meeting.
Yeah. I haven't had a drink since.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I've had a drink since. We never did drugs. So.
You mentioned doing beginner's meetings at Russell Street. Where did they have those meetings?
In that little office, Fred's office. Remember Fred? Fred the...
I always thought it was kind of a closet.
No, it was a real... It had a desk in it, a couple chairs. It was a... Let me let him out.
You may have mentioned it, but how did you hear about Alcoholics Anonymous?
You know, I didn't know hardly anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. There were movies that I heard about or maybe watched, like The Lost Weekend, stuff like that with Ray Milland. But that was way back in the early, in the 40s. So I probably didn't watch it, knew I might have watched it. I don't know. I just heard about it. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know much about it. I know people didn't drink there. That's about it. I didn't know much about it at all.
How did you find meetings when you were out traveling?
I went to the directory. It was the World Directory. And I went to that and found one. And then I'd get the local schedule. And like I'd go to Huntington, go to the clubhouse. And I had the schedule for all the meetings up there. I went to a lot of meetings in Huntington. A lot of meetings all around there. Across the river from Portsmouth, I forget the name of the little town.
And what type of meetings were there that you liked to go to?
Well, there weren't hardly any speaker meetings up there. They were almost all discussion meetings. Yeah,
so. All right. What was it like, your early days of sobriety? Did you struggle, or was it something that you let go of fairly easily? Or
no, I had a lot of withdrawals. I wanted to drink all the time. I don't know what... I'll tell you, this sounds stupid. I quit smoking when I was 6 months sober. And then I really wanted to drink. And what I started doing was, this sounds stupid, sucking on Bellamints. And that kind of reduced both crazes. I don't know about craves. I don't know why. But it did, you know. And that's what it was like. It was hard. It was hard for several months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I shook and didn't sleep. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was drinking a quart of bourbon a day, most days, you know. But it was short term, because I start drinking about 4 after I got off work. I go to a couple bars and drink, and then come home, I'm get a bottle of booze and drink some more at home. Then I go up to a little bar uptown called the Central Cafe and drink till it was closing time, and somehow get home. Sometimes I had to just stagger home because I was too drunk to drive. But I used to go to the Hillcrest a lot. That was a bar out in Alexandria.
Who are some of the... You've mentioned some folks, but are there any other people you can...
Bob S.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. He was something else. And the bus driver guy, Jim W. Early on, a guy named Jim C. came in, who was a professional football player.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't much long after me. A guy named Ed S. got sober a month before I did. And I'm seeing him now, here and there.
Did your sponsor get you into the book or the steps?
Tony was my sponsor early on. And he got me into the books and steps. And I really did kind of a half-staff, fourth and fifth step. But it was enough to keep me sober, I guess. And it went on for a while. And it just seemed like it wasn't working with Tony. So I got a guy out of town, Huntington. In Huntington, it worked with me for a while. His name escapes me right now, but I'll come up with it maybe for them. And I worked with him quite a bit, and then I eventually got Killer Joe. And I had him for quite a few years, and we just never really hit it off. I don't know, I can't explain it. I remember little things that bugged me. He gave a lead out of it, several years ago, when I was still going to the Big A. And he brought, there was a couple guys that came to hear him from across the river. I can't think of their names, but he talked about them. Oh, they're so-and-so. He never mentioned my name. And it was my anniversary. And he didn't give me a coin. It really pissed me off. It ate on me and ate on me. And several months later, I just got a different sponsor.
Yeah. You also used Keith L. for a while.
Oh, yeah. Damn, thank you. Yeah, that's who I had for all those years. Keith L. Yeah, thank you. My memory's so bad. Yeah, I was at a conference. And I used to talk a lot, mainly because I had a lot of bullshit. I used to know the history of AA. I mean, I really knew the history of AA. I read all that crap. And people like to hear that, you know. And they started asking me to talk, and I was just full of crap. And matter of fact, Keith L. talked to this down south somewhere at this convention. And he says, I need something. Could you drive? I don't have a car here. And I drove him. And afterwards, he said, let's talk. We stopped at the parking lot of the hotel. He said, you're full of shit. What? It just ticked me off. And it ate on me and, you know, on and on. A couple months later, I called him and asked me my sponsor. And Keith was my sponsor, but he had Lou Gehrig's disease. And he started really, really slipping near the end, to the point that it was really sad. He'd go up to Walmart and put his army hat on and pass out stuff about the army and stuff. And, you know, just talk nonsense to anybody who would come by. And eventually, matter of fact, we had him up here for a weekend little deal at the place over by Maysville. Blue Licks or...
Aberdeen or...
No, it was a little convention. Blue Licks.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, Blue Licks on 62.
Yeah, and he came up to talk, and by then he didn't, you know, it was sad. People that never heard him were really disappointed. I mean, they didn't understand why would anybody... Because, you know, he was losing it, you know.
Oh, I love to hear him talk. I went to Fort Wayne to a conference, and I think that was the first time I'd met him. But what I remember, you got me into listening to cassettes, and I could, whenever I would drive anywhere, I could, and I, that was a big part of my sobriety.
I had 300 cassettes at one time. And eventually, I gave a lot of Oak Street, Russell Street, put them in. And somebody stole most of them in places. But, you know.
Hopefully it helped them.
Yeah, but they, you know, they, I don't have any cassette anymore, but I had a bunch of them, and I really enjoyed them, you know. And I don't know how I got into that, but I know how I started to get into it. Lou D, he was another old-timer, he was Tony's sponsor. And Lou D, I'd go out of his house and bullshit with, I mean, he was more my sponsor than Tony for a long time. Mm. And I'd bullcrap with him, and he had a thing that recorded tapes. And he'd sit there and we'd bullcrap, and he'd make me about 10, 20 tapes at a time. And that's how I got started. And I entered where I went. We used to go to a lot of conferences. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went to probably 15 conferences a year. Right now I can't because I can't get around, but and get the tapes, and I'd always buy the whole set, you know. So I accumulated a hell of a set. I think they're all gone now.
Yeah.
But I give them away, and, you know, there were some great, all the real GMW and a lot of the old guys are Clancy, and mm-hmm. so many of the old guys are gone. And they just were so good. We had a lot of them here at different. We did a good job getting really big name speakers here, you know.
I remember Kentucky State, I guess it was in 1990 maybe, out at the drawbridge. I think it was Kentucky State, and Opie was the speaker.
Chair.
Yeah, the chair. And I don't know, it seemed like there was like 1,200 people there. It was just a really big conference, well attended.
Is that the one that got shut down by the fire department?
Well, the fire department came in and...
didn't shut down. But...
Yeah, they stopped the conference. And there were three big mirrors at one end of the hall that we met in. And after they left... Clancy was speaking, And he said, you know, you on this side, go out that door, and you guys in the middle go out that door, and you on the other end go out this door. And me and the people up here at the table will go stand in front of the mirrors and look at the ones we love the most.
he was something else. I got to meet Clancy. I went to California and drove with him. And me and, what is his name? His wife's still alive. Dark hair, Italian looking. Anyway, he knew Clancy really well. And I went out with him. And we were going down the highway. And Clancy said, pull over here, right? And on an expressway. There's a car disabled. Just help that guy.
Really?
Yeah. And I got to really know Clancy that day. He was a very kind man. Who was that? Oh, God, my memory. His wife is still alive.
I can't.
He had real dark hair.
I'm thinking of Dick.
No.
M.
No. 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 No, you're talking about Dick. No, I'm sorry, Dick M. No, he's long gone too. See, so many people, like Dicobe tapes that he's, it's gone. You know, that's where I got a lot of tapes.
Hmm.
I mean, I just pick up the phone, send me, they used to have a big best, and they'd send me those every month. Yeah. I mean, I was a tape, I had the biggest tape collection in Greater Cincinnati by far. And I eventually gave them all away, you know.
Did you help start any meetings in Northern Kentucky?
Yeah, I started the Asbury Group, but I drifted away from it because there wasn't nothing going on Tuesday night in Northern Kentucky. And I started it, and then I realized I'm out of town most. So I turned it over to a couple of my grand sponsees, and I can't remember their names. So.
Trigger.
Trigger one.
And Steve W. The.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Bill N.
Yeah, I don't know what, yeah, Bill had.
And it was a guy that was a carpet layer, Tao. His wife was in Al-Anon. He hung with Trigger all the time. Al
LS.
Yeah.
I see Al. He's showing up. He goes to the Big A now.
Is that right?
Yeah. I haven't been there for a while. I was going to the Big A for a while because it was so convenient. But my home group's Happy Joyce and Free, so I go down there on Wednesday night.
Who's your sponsor now?
Janet C.
Yeah.
I got her about 9 months ago.
Yeah, she's good people.
Yeah, I just couldn't think of anybody else, you know. And I love her and love to talk to her. And her and her husband aren't doing real well, you know, guys. They're just both kind of... The guy's really crippled up, and Janet's just not doing well. She's got a lot of little problems.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love talking to her.
Did you have any trouble connecting or coming up with conscious contact with your higher power? Was that something that...
No. I was raised Catholic. I was in a seminary. And he went to a Catholic. All my whole life was Catholic. Grade school, high school, college. I went to all Catholic colleges. And then I was in a seminary for a year. So, I mean, I really didn't. I kind of got ticked off with the Bishop of Covington. Matter of fact, I came in drunk, and he kept the guy was, his name was Father G. He was head of the seminary, and he reported me to the bishop. Bishop, I said, he's got straight A's, can't be that bad, because he was good, went to school too. And eventually, the bishop showed up, and we had a little altercation. You know, I kind of pushed him, and he was just nasty. So I really had kind of resentment against him, and kind of turned my back. And I'm still not as good a Catholic as I should be. You know, I still am, but I don't go to Mass every day, or every Sunday even. So, you know, I used to be very, very fervent about that kind of stuff. So, you know. So I didn't have that big of a problem with it.
I remember we didn't have any place in Northern Kentucky as a detox. And it was getting harder to get people into detox, into the emergency rooms over in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be dually diagnosed. And yeah. And I know you played a big part in starting the detox at Druggie House.
Detox, yeah.
Can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, I knew the director of transitions, and got talking to him, and then I got on the board of transitions too for quite a few years. And then we talked, this was after that, but we talked about that, and I said, you know, we could maybe start that. And we started a detox up there, and I can't remember who else was involved, but that was a long time ago.
I remember we went out to a guy's house in Park Hills.
Yeah.
And I don't remember his name either.
Oh, God, his wife was in AA, too. And she was, he's dead now, too. I think she, it was Bridget's mom.
Really?
Husband, yeah. Yeah, Bridget's mom's husband. And she was a real pretty lady. I think she's dead, and her husband's dead. And I can't remember anything. He wasn't Bridget's father.
Right.
I can't remember his name.
Well, I know.
He had money. I remember that.
We used to love going down to druggy detox, like Steve N, chair to beginners meeting down there, or just chair to meeting. And it was a good place to go to see fresh alcoholics. And
I went every week for years, you know, at least every week for years. And it was a good place. I can't remember who was the main person down there for a long time.
Pam and Sharon worked.
Well, yeah, Pam there for years, and she got fired for... She was helping people more than she should. I forget some of the stuff she did, but
yeah,
they lost something when they lost her.
Probably a lot of burnout down there.
Didn't know they lost something when they lost her. Maybe she was something else. Is she still going around?
Yeah, I still see her.
I guess her and Indiana are together.
Since you came in, there weren't cell phones, and we didn't have pagers, and yeah. How were people contacted?
We had a little schedule. They had a phone thing on the back, and everybody would pass it around every meeting and write your name and phone number on. And just word of mouth, and that little thing with numbers on it.
Yeah.
It just worked. Or you see them at meetings, you know, because I went to a lot of meetings. I went to probably two meetings a day for a long time. You know, I wish I could today. I'm down to maybe four or five meetings.
Still doing well.
The ones I can get to, you know, they're hard. I really have trouble walking as well as you will now.
Right. Did you have any experience in service?
No. Okay. Matter of fact, I got drafted, but I got 4F because I had TB when I was a kid. Whether I had TB or not is really up. They put me at a TB hospital. My company arranged that. I worked for General Electric, but I was working in the aircraft and nuclear propulsion department. And one of my jobs, we had this cage, and you put your hands through with clubs, and we're playing with uranium and making billets. The billets were rolled out, and they made it in a circle. It was like a fusion thing. And hell, I made it a radioactive poison because I got well. I have absolutely no signs of it. Matter of fact, I just had a TB test. It's part of the physical, not even any signs I've ever had. So, I mean, there's a lot of... And the funny part, my company paid my salary the whole time. I was there, you know, and then they gave me a settlement at the end of that. And it was pretty cool because I never bought a brand new car. You know?
I was trying to think of any other... of course, we had the Clubhouse Promises Club that came...
Much later.
Yeah.
Deb Yee was very instrumental in getting that started.
Right.
And, before that was Russell Street started about 80, kind of guessing. 88, a couple of years, two or three before I got sober. And, of course, Oak Street's been there forever. And, I used to have a thing in there with all the history of Oak Street. I don't know if it's in there in the other room or not.
Right.
But, and Tri-County Center wasn't open yet. And Eastside Center opened somewhere around the time I got, maybe a little after I got sober. And I was in the other clubhouses. There's one up on, over in Cincinnati. It's still there. It's a small one. I can't think of the name of it.
On the west side?
No, on the east side, no. more north.
Tri-County?
No, not Tri-County. No, there's a real little, it's still there. I'll look at the schedule real quick. But yeah, no, Tri-County opened after that too. And at first it was out in a different, real little building downstairs up on Harrison or Queen City or one of them streets up there. And then it moved, and a guy named Bill C was really instrumental in getting that going, you know. It's funny how certain people just get to drive and get things going, you know.
Right.
I don't know who started Russell Street. I probably did it one time. I probably did it one time.
Do you notice any changes in AA or in meetings or folks from the time that you came in to what you see today?
Oh, God, yeah. Biggest thing is the drugs. There just weren't that many people on drugs back then. You know, there was a few little bit of marijuanas, but I mean, I didn't do anything. You know, I never smoked a marijuana in my life and that kind of thing. But there was a lot of people that that's about all they did. And some of them did nothing but alcohol. It was just totally different. Today, you can't hear a lead door. It's not loaded with drugs. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't bother me as much as it does a lot of people. I mean, that's just the nature of the disease today. You know, they're so available, and it just, I don't know, the volumes, and if people start on volumes because they get too jittery from the drugs, or they start on the speed so they can drink more, and you know, but there just wasn't that much of a deal with drugs back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there was, a lot of meetings wouldn't let you met. If you talked about them, they'd tell you to leave. I remember there was a meeting, it's still around, Bob C's meeting.
That big book meeting down in Newport.
Yeah, well, yeah, but now it's out at, what the hell's the name of it? But anyway.
East something?
No. It was Bob C's meeting, and it was Downs. Where the hell was it? But now it's out in Fort Thomas.
Eastside One, or?
No.
It was at that stone church across from the courthouse down in Newport.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but it's still around. And in that meeting, if you talked about drugs, they threw you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
They'd call you in the back room and tell you to leave. And a lot of people were coming from Drogie House. You know, back then, they were in Drogie House with the 90-day program had opened. And they were coming there, and they didn't know nothing. And it was just, you know. Matter of fact, I went to one meeting there, and they threw two guys from Drogie House out, and I got them walked out and never been back. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, don't have the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets or anything that, since you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, any comments or...
Regrets? No, I don't have any regrets. Right now, it's really slowed down since COVID. A lot of meetings are shadows of what they used to be. I don't know if people are dead or drinking or just don't go or go to different meetings. They might be going to clubhouses because I can't do Russell Street. I mean, not Russell Street. I can't do
Promises,
and I can't do Oak because of the walking, you know. So, and I don't get out to the drive. I could probably get out there, come to think of it. But
what was it like for you during COVID? How did you do AA?
I did a lot of Zoom.
Yeah.
Did a lot of Zoom, and then gradually I started sneaking out the meetings. Now I don't do any Zoom. I got tired of Zoom. I did so much of it for so long. I was doing meetings in California and Nevada, and, you know, it was kind of fun. I got to know a lot of people, you know, so I got to do a couple leads on Zoom, you know, and stuff like that. But you know, I just gradually drifted away from it. Now I'm going to 4 to 5 meetings a week, depending on my, you know, how I feel. I go to. Definitely go to Sunday night.
So Alcoholics Anonymous has played a big part in your life.
Oh my God, yeah. It has consumed my life. It didn't consume it, but it was a whole big part of my life. You know, I wouldn't be able to accomplish anything without it. I mean, it saved my life, and it saved my career, it saved my marriage. Well, my first marriage, my first wife died of alcoholism, so it didn't save that, but... You know, I was 10 years sober when she died, and that was hard. That was hard. You probably remember that.
I remember Carol.
Yeah. She was sober for quite a while, and then she got drunk, and just really went off the deep end. And she just could not get sober. She was everywhere. I mean, she ran out of insurance, and we owed so much money from medical hospitals and this. She went to detoxes in hospitals in 4 or 5 states. Yeah, it was sad. It's a nasty disease.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any last comments?
I was seeing other people. Another guy that I can remember from was real active in the East. I was Keith.
Keith from the West Coast?
No, Keith from... He's real active on at the Eastside Center. Keith.
I can't think of his last name.
A lot of hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. His wife. What's his wife's name? She's not as active as she used to be. But Keith still is.
Okay.
Matter of fact, Keith's the one that showed up to, when I gave the lead. He was one of the ones that Joe sponsors too.
Yeah.
Or did sponsor Keith. What the hell? I know his name as well as I am. And he really is. He's kind of a braggadocio guy, but when you really get to know him, he's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
And he's got the guys over on that side of town worship him. They follow him around like little puppy dogs, so he must have something.
Right.
And I mean, guys with pretty good sobriety,
Okay. Well, Dick, I'd like to thank you so much for participating and